Hello, I'm Andy Burnerman, and welcome to Sparks. This week, fixing your washing machine, teletext licenses up for auction, shortwave in the United States, a recording of Queen Victoria's voice, TV AM squeeze foldback audio into the NICAM carrier, and more news on Century, Ireland's former national commercial station. Some other bits and pieces, and of course your letters. That makes up Sparks, every week on Monday and Tuesday on Radio Fax, 6205 and 12255. And now, for the winter, in the UK, 3910.
At the moment that we have left, we want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
The cost of personality. I know your anger, I know your dreams. I've been everything you wanna be. Oh, I'm the cost of personality. Like Mussolini and Kennedy, I'm the cost of personality. The cost of personality. The cost of personality.
Never.
Here's a letter from John Braden, writing from Lehman in Germany. He starts with a reception report, including a rebroadcast of Radio North Sea International from 1974, a tape of Radio Caroline from September 1990, and then a report of airport news from the archive programme. This was really boring, he writes. This first segment was well worth tuning in. I like hearing particularly good replays. Then things got pretty monotonous with the airport reports. They're terribly boring, aren't they? And mouldy oldies. If I like the oldies, I'd buy the CD rather than trudge through fading and static crashes. I want something I can't get anywhere else. Well, some people like the oldies. Obviously not John Braden. I'm using a Sangian ATS-803A and 40-metre dipole. I live in southern Germany, south of Kaiserslautern. I moved there a year ago from the United States, where I tuned in several pirates. I'm a physician contracting with the Army, and I very much enjoy tuning Euro pirates. Good luck. Well, same to you, John. And he writes, later, further on down the page, about Sparks. Heard your programme of Churchill's speeches, review of the CFA, the Crossfield Antenna, and letters. Format was greatly improved. Very interesting material. Thanks very much for that, John. So, moving on to something from The Guardian. Do it yourself. Bubbles and squeaks. Gareth Parry with cures for ailing washing machines. Washing machines are probably the most overworked household electrical appliance. Most have had at least a year's warranty, some have a 5-year optional extension. If this is the case, fiddling about may void the warranty. Sorry, but you'll just have to wait all day for the engineer to call. Service manuals with new machines sometimes have helpful diagrams of various parts. Like humans, older models can behave badly in a number of ways, one of the most common being a refusal to drain off the water once the final rinse cycle is over. You may be able to get rid of most of it by turning the programmer straight to spin and drain. If you can't, prepare for a flood with lots of newspapers on the floor and containers at hand. Never, ever look into a broken machine before disconnecting it from the electricity supply. Switching off at the plug is not enough. And if you really can't figure out how to disconnect a fused switch unit, then turn off at the mains. But remember, the most usual case of a stalled machine is a blown fuse in the plug. Check the fuse and connections within it, as well as the ones to the appliance itself. After disconnecting the power, turn off the water supply, usually red and blue hosed taps leading into the machine. Haul the machine out from under the work surface. Remove the back and check the filter for drachmas, buttons, hair grips, etc. Unfasten and remove the inlet and outlet hoses and look for bigger obstructions there. This could, by the way, solve the mystery of the missing socks. But the trouble could be as simple as the hoses kinking as the machine is pushed back into a tight space below a work surface. If the pump doesn't spin freely and its connections are sound, it's probably had it. Disconnect, remove it, and take it to the local dealers for an exact replacement. Front doors leak because the rubber seals around them have perished. Fit a replacement. It helps to gently warm it with a hairdryer. Banshee screams or screeching during the spin cycle indicate worn or slack rubber drive belts. Don't try and adjust the tension. They've probably stretched too much. Simply replace them. The serial number is usually on the belt. However, even new belts can get greasy. Try wiping with a dry cloth. If the water in the machine remains cold, there's probably a fault in the heating element. These can be tricky to remove and expensive to replace, so you might as well call repairman. Machines that overfill usually have a faulty air pressure switch, which should automatically turn off the supply. It's usually a blockage in the pipe running into the switch. Detach and blow through it. Don't suck. Your second best friend, the tumble dryer, also suffers from blockages. The main filter, which traps lint and fluff, needs cleaning out before every session, otherwise the contraption can overheat, burning out the quite expensive heating element. This doesn't apply to condenser models. Replace broken or torn filters, or risk a load of clean washing becoming impregnated with a blowback of brownish flush, fluff and cat hairs. Squeaking machines probably have bearings which have dried out by the same hot air that dries the clothes. As long as the tension on the drive and fan belts is correct, a few drops of light oil on the bearings will work wonders. But if the bearing on the edge of the drying drum seems to be the noise source, do not oil it. If it's made of nylon, lubricate it with a light coating of PTFE spray. Lubricate a fabric bearing with just a touch of silicone grease. A dryer which runs cold is almost certainly had a thermostat failure. It's usually fixed with just a couple of screws. Undo the spade connectors and buy another one for about £3. The thermostat may have just stuck open, but if the new one similarly fails, call repairman. If the motor is running, but nothing else much seems to be happening in the way of hot air blowing, suspect a broken fan belt. Replace with the exact part number. Don't try and make do with something similar, as it may damage the machine. If a tumble dryer vibrates badly, first check there is nothing you can do to adjust the stubby legs on some models. Otherwise, the bearings are likely to need replacing at a cost. Refrigerators are usually quite trouble-free, but door seals wear out or get damaged. They are easily replaced. If power is reaching the fridge but not cooling it successfully, the first check is to see if the condenser evaporator at the back of the cabinet is warm. If it isn't, select a colder setting. Gareth Parry, writing in The Guardian. Now, I've heard that the actual sealed unit in the back of the fridge, the black thing down the bottom, is unbelievably reliable. Most definitely the most reliable thing you're ever likely to buy, because it's built to military specifications, apparently, or equivalent. Fascinating stuff. Now, something from Radio 5 about asteroids.
The American space probe Galileo has taken the closest ever picture of an asteroid. The Galileo was hurtling through space on its way to Jupiter when it took the picture of the asteroid Gaspra, which was just over 16,000 kilometers away. That's close. The first ever photo of Gaspra shows it to be 6 miles in diameter with a shape a bit like a giant shark's head. The photograph of the asteroid, which is in orbit between Mars and Jupiter, was taken using a special green filter. And after hours of painstaking research, the Formula 5 news team managed to find someone who's actually enthusiastic about asteroids. It's Dr. David Hughes, who's a planetary expert from the University of Sheffield.
Well, I find them fascinating because they are a planet that failed. You know, Mars was produced, Earth was produced, Jupiter was produced, but the big planet that was trying to be produced in the asteroid belt just didn't make it. But instead of these bits coming together and growing into something large, their orbits were stirred up by Jupiter, and they came together and smashed into each other so energetically that they just simply broke up.
That was from BBC Radio 5.
The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
5, 4...
Frequency clear.
From ProSound News, a piece about secret audio in your NICAM. Delphi's Foldback Solution by Tim Frost. Television broadcaster TVAM has introduced a unique form of foldback for use with news gathering teams outside the studio. Broadcasters have a continuing battle in obtaining reliable methods of getting studio foldback to smaller mobile live links. Instructions and queue applications have traditionally used radio and mobile phones, despite patchy coverage and high usage cost. Now that NICAM stereo television coverage is available to the majority of the UK, TVAM engineers discovered that new developments in digital voice coders would allow them to fit an intelligible voice channel in the user bit area of the NICAM format. Nearly all digital formats offer a small spare area of data space for standard independent applications. In the case of NICAM, there are 11 1K bit blocks, which would normally be considered much too small an area to transmit digital sound. But Salisbury-based Delphi Systems Inc. has developed a codec DSC6400 specifically for speech that combines linear prediction with a special lookup table, which is a technique to transmit AM radio quality sound in just 5 kilobits, a compression system a dozen times more powerful than the music-based compression formats currently being developed for digital radio and Philips's DCC digital cassette system. TVAM project engineer Nick Butt took just 6 weeks from first considering the idea to fully implementing the CELP, Codebook Excited Linear Predictive, system into its NICAM transmissions. Now, all a news team needs to carry with them is a NICAM receiver with a KELP unit accessing the user data, and they have studio foldback wherever they are based in the country. Says Butt, it is reliable as a communications channel, as the NICAM signal is very robust. It is so simple that it has knocked a few people sideways. And now we are getting calls from other engineers wanting to see how it is done. That's all about Foldback from the Studio, hidden in your NICAM stereo sound. By Tim Frost in ProSound News.
Here's an interesting letter. It's from John Thorpe, Head of Development, and Robert Ellis, Technical Support Engineer, from Low Amateur Radio. They also list themselves as Senior ANORAC Consultants to Atlantic 252. Thank you for your information pack. It made fascinating reading, and we wish you well in your search for that elusive license. In line with the company's policy of we'll show you ours if you show us yours, we submit this signal report pursuant to one of your catalogues and wish you a Christmas free of ionospheric disturbances. From John Thorpe and Robert Ellis, Senior ANORAC Consultants to Atlantic 252. P.S. they write, from this you may note we take our ANORAC duties very seriously. Would it be responsible to suggest an upmarket ANORAC is a barber? Groan. Two employees from Low Electronics writing in. Thanks very much to them. And you too could write in. I look forward to receiving your letter and guarantee to read it out on air. The address is Sparks, Radiofax, The Forge, Cranley, England, GU67BG. If you'd like a reply in writing, which includes a station card, technical information, and an artist's impression of the transmitter site, please send 50 pence, 3 international reply coupons, or $1. The address again, Sparks, Radiofax, The Forge, Cranley, England, GU67BG.
If you're considering buying one of the Philips DC777 shortwave car radios from Radiofax Sales, here's some very good news for you. After some hard bargaining with our suppliers, we're now able to offer these terrific shortwave car radios at the new lower price of only £239. And remember, not only is the DC777 a good quality digital readout shortwave tuner, it also has long wave, medium wave, FM stereo, a high quality stereo cassette deck and powerful stereo amplifier, all in a compact, standard size in-car unit. Shortwave coverage is from 3170 to 21910 kHz continuous. This unit receives a good review in the World Radio and TV Handbook, and 4 stars in the Radio Netherland receiver shopping list. The new low price, remember, is only £239, inclusive of VAT and delivery in the UK or overseas airmail to anywhere in the world. There's no long wait for your unit to arrive. We hold them in stock. Contact our sales office for more information and a brochure. Telephone number is in England, 0483 275 997. Fax number is also in England, 0483 276 477. Or write to us at Radio Fax, The Forge, Cranley, GU6 7BG in England.
In America, shortwave commercial broadcasting is legal. Here's an item about it and how it's faring from Jonathan Marks on Media Network.
Just over 10 years ago, one of the first interviews I did was with Joe Costello, the owner of several radio and television stations in Louisiana, USA. He decided to put on a commercial shortwave radio station, WRNO, and at the time was convinced the 80s would be the start of a new era. A decade later, many stations like KUSW or KYOI that followed RNO's commercial lead have sold out to religious organizations. Joe Costello dropped by at our studios in Hilversum a couple of days back, and I asked him if we could conclude that shortwave is not commercially viable after all.
No, it isn't. I had a feeling at the time in 1979 when I applied for a license.
You may recall that during that period, the only other person to apply was Billy Graham, and he had applied for a station in Hawaii. That application sat at the Federal Communications Commission for years, and then my application came along, and they suddenly decided it took a lot of negotiating to push the government. There hadn't been a shortwave privately owned license granted in 40 years. But to answer your question, the commercial viability of shortwave radio is just not there. In our country, advertising is sold on the rating point system, and millions and millions of dollars in every city in the country are based on who has the share of audience. They do a small sample of 600 to 1,000 people and then project that out to represent a whole city or a whole metropolitan area, and then millions of dollars are placed on you, how you score in that sample. And to approach a buyer in New York or any other major advertising capital in the United States is, they don't understand it. At this point, Jonathan, it is not as economically viable as I thought it might be at the end of its first decade.
So you couldn't foresee this, let's say, 10 years ago?
No, I think it was a little bit of youth and exuberance. You got to understand that WRNO Worldwide was a dream of three ham radio operators. Joe Polley, Jack Bruce, and myself. We're still there today, and we're using one 100 kilowatt transmitter with a log periodic antenna, and our beam is 20 degrees off of true north. It is not slewable, but when I did buy the antenna and chose it from an engineering standpoint, I chose it. The FCC requires a 10 dB gain in the direction of your pattern. So I bought one that had the widest predicted coverage pattern. I'm not trying to get one language into one country and using a narrow beam antenna to concentrate the power. I'm using an antenna that has a beam width almost 90 degrees wide. And as it sits in New Orleans, it follows the polar route, and it puts a great signal. It has an ERP of 3.2 megawatts, and it puts a great signal over North and South America. And then it goes over the pole to serve Europe, Holland. We've got listeners here in Germany, everything. Mm-hmm. We average, probably by your standards, not very much, but for about a 13-person operation, by the way, I do operate three FMs, two AMs, and the shortwave, mm-hmm. all serving South Louisiana and WRNO Worldwide. So from the commercial viability standpoint of it, it hasn't been what I'd like it to be.
What sort of response do you get? I mean,
we are getting about 1,000 to 1,500 letters a month, unsolicited. We do run announcements that we will QSL. We have a series of collector's edition QSL cards. Depending on what they're listening to and what they request, we send them the QSL that they want. And it's possible to get, at this point, probably 10 QSLs.
One final question. Have you had problems with the transmitter? Because sometimes we notice the power seems to be much lower.
Well, at times, Jonathan, it is necessary to do that. You know, we don't have a standby transmitter to go. So if we're in a situation, we have a water-cooled transmitter, and there's a problem with the water that we get from the Mississippi River, and it's always corroding and things of that nature. And sometimes it's necessary to reduce the power to keep the station on the air, so that we can then service it as it goes off.
Uh-huh.
Another thing that has become really a problem for me is that, and I'm speaking engineering now to people who may not understand, but the finals in the transmitter are IMAX 5CX 50,000 EPs. These tubes are about $24,000 each. What happens is that they're no longer being manufactured. And what we're finding now is that we're actively scouting people who have these tubes, and we are getting them rebuilt by a company who does rebuild them. So we are able to have the tube that's on the air, which, by the way, is two of them because you have the power amplifier and the modulator. And that's the reason sometimes that it goes. It is a water-cooled transmitter. It has all the problems that you would have with a plumbing system, corrosive water. It needs distilled water. And there are times, rather than take the station off the air, we will reduce power to keep everything working.
Joe Costello of WRNO Worldwide.
All about shortwave private broadcasting in America there, with Jonathan Marks from Radio Netherlands Media Network.
Fascinating report. You're listening to Sparks on Radio Facts every Monday and Tuesday. It's our weekly review of technical, media and scientific news.
It's been a hard day's night, and I've been working like a dog. It's been a hard day's night. I should be sleeping like a log. But when I get home to you, I find the things that you do will make me feel alright. You know I work all day to get your money to buy a thing. And it's worth it just to hear you say you're gonna give me everything. So why on earth should I moan? Cause when I get you alone, you know I feel okay. When I'm home, everything seems to be right. When I'm home, feeling you holding me tight, yeah. It's been a hard day's night, and I've been working like a dog. It's been a hard be sleeping like a love. But when I get home to you, I find the things that you do will make me feel alright. Ah!
From the Saturday Notebook in The Guardian, Rebecca Smithers, consulting the Oracle, the Independent Television Commission's next challenge. If you thought the big carve-up of the Independent Television Network was all over, think again. After the emotional thrills and spills of the awards of the new Channel 3 television licences, the next auction on the horizon is the sell-off of Teletext, the news and information medium, which is transmitted through the television network on spare lines not used for the picture. This second tier sell-off, which will again be handled by the Independent Television Commission, if indeed it can muster the energy after the rigours of the last few months, is bound not to attract as much attention as the first. Yet, the amount of money bid for the Channel 3 National Public Teletext licence, currently held by Oracle, could be much more than what has been offered for some smaller television companies. More importantly, it is a medium which has great profit potential, with a proven commercial track record, despite a shaky start, and relatively low overheads. Oracle's profits for 1990 are expected to be around £3.5 million, on par with a medium-sized television company. The sell-off involves only the Oracle services offered on channels 3 and 4, but will also involve allocations of lines on the new channel 5, which will be launched sometime after 1993. Oracle's license runs out at the end of 1992, along with the other television franchises. The BBC teletext service, CFAX, which is run on BBC 1 and 2, will be unaffected by the sell-off. At the moment, Oracle provides more than 1,500 individual pages, including advertising, although exact capacity is difficult to specify because new technology has made it possible to use multi-pages. Because of a large regular daily viewing audience of around 6.5 million people, more than the Sun's readership, the best-read national newspaper, advertising rates are competitively pitched, with most deals booked on a series basis. Rates are generally better value than for national newspapers, given the higher readership. A single page, if shown nationally for an entire week, for example, would cost £7,500, but would qualify for discounts of up to 40% if run for up to 52 weeks. This compares with the most expensive rate of £19,000 for a prime page for one day in The Guardian. There is scope for increasing the number of viewers, as around 40% of all television sets now have a teletext facility, and the figure is expected to double by the end of the decade. So, what does the forthcoming carve-up mean for the viewer? The current operation will be split to offer a national public service and a number of unspecified additional commercial services. The public service will be the most important, offering news and other editorial information. Like television franchise applicants, the highest bidder will win, but must pass a quality threshold laid down by the Independent Television Commission. The winner will have to offer national and international news, regional information, for which the number of pages will be specified, and must offer editorial in 8 key areas, including weather, sport, travel, and educational material. The commercial additional service licenses, however, will be sold off to companies who want to distribute rapidly changing information to a target audience. So, obvious candidates are bookmakers who already use television screens, and also financial services companies who may want to offer share prices. They must specify to the ITC in advance what they intend to use the service for, but the ITC will not monitor the quality of their proposed output. Thankfully, the ITC is likely to take a dim view of those wishing to offer teletext versions of chat lines, for example. Whatever appears via the commercial services, viewers should thank their lucky stars that the original proposals in the broadcasting bill were not adhered to, due largely to active lobbying from Oracle. David Meller, then in charge of broadcasting, was persuaded to change the original plan, which was to fill the government's coffers by selling off the entire independent teletext network to commercial players with no public service at all. The change of plan means that there will be less capacity for the public service than Oracle has at the moment. There is one argument that it will force the provider to concentrate on quality rather than quantity. This could see the end of general feature material such as knitting, recipes, chess and angling, and the kids' pages, reducing the scope of advertisement sales. But the most popular sections, news, sport, business and television listings, may end up being of higher quality than at the moment. Whatever the quality offered by the new provider, however, there are still the basic criticisms of teletext itself which have to be overcome. The most common gripes are that teletext is not user-friendly, and viewers complain that it takes too long for a page to be called up. The average time to page the Oracle is 10 seconds, even though innovations such as FastText are helping speed things up. But teletext is increasingly pipping other news media at the post. Oracle made its name with fast-moving events in the Falklands War, and is in dispute with CFAX over who was the first to announce the resignation of Mrs. Thatcher. So, who are the likely bidders? This is where the battle hots up even more, and could be as acrimonious as the fight for the television franchises. Oracle, which trades as Oracle Teletext Limited, will, naturally enough, be applying in its own right to retain the franchise. But it faces a rival bid from Independent Television News, which currently provides news, sport and city information. The ITN board has to decide whether it should bid for the franchise after it has lost in its attempt to bid for the breakfast television franchise as part of the Daybreak consortium. Other bidders are rumoured to include IntelFax, which currently provides editorial pages for Channel 4, and the news agencies Reuters and Press Association. It is even thought that publishing groups which lost out in the scramble for the television franchises, such as Virgin, might also bid. To make matters even worse, it is understood that some ex-Oracle employees are helping rivals to prepare bids. The timetable will be a tight one. The ITC expects to ask for bids for the public license before the end of the year, and will announce the winner next March, with a view to starting broadcasting in 1993. All about teletext licenses there on Channel 3 and Channel 4 by Rebecca Smithers in The Guardian.
If the show
sent in by John Braden from Lehman in Germany, is a listing from the ANARC Shortwave Listeners Net from Pennsylvania in the United States. They list us on 12255 and a few American pirates. 6240, the Voice of Tomorrow. 67410, Voice of Tomorrow also. And all on 7415, Radio Free North America. East Coast Beer Drinker. Action Radio. Defiance 90 and Radio USA. In this country, recently Radio Merlin has returned on 6240 and on 6310, Radio Dublin from Ireland has come back. It's Sparks on Radio Fax. Hello to Raimondi Danielle, who writes from Verona in Italy. He listens on 6205. With little interference and reports, our music good. Thanks very much, Ray Miondi.
This is from the Radio 4 Kaleidoscope program, where somebody was describing his work with a cylinder recording, which he believes has the voice of Queen Victoria recorded on it.
And I have to say that at the end of a whole morning's work, we'd still probably only got about four words out of it.
And this is what you're doing, effectively, to work out how to clean up the thing, is you are electronically filtering the sound that you've got from a tape of the original cylinder.
That's right, yes, so as to save submitting the cylinder to unnecessary strain and stress, yes.
What techniques did you use further to try and make the thing intelligible?
Well, a filtering process, which the recipe book says one off the bass and one off the treble, did not touch the audible speech as far as we could tell at all, but it did mean that you could play the cylinder much more loudly on a loudspeaker without risk of blowing the loudspeaker up.
Obviously a problem. And what eventually, when you've cleaned this thing, what is the best that you've been able to get?
The next stage, if I may put it this way, was a decision that we would have to risk playing the cylinder with a different kind of stylus. In fact, I chose one thou tip which I reckoned would go right down to the bottom of the groove where the sound waves were, and I thought that maybe I was rattling along the top edge of the groove where all the distortion was before. So we did that, and the transfer was a great deal better again. We then listened to that tape many times, but unfortunately I was very worried at that stage because I could see that I was beginning to damage the surface of the cylinder.
How do you know you were damaging it?
In this particular case, a small amount of very light brown dust was accumulating around the stylus. It was not actually changing the colour of the cylinder at all, but something was coming off it, and so I knew that I mustn't push that my luck any further.
If it is Queen Victoria, what have you been able to establish that she says?
I would say the only thing that everybody is unanimous about is the first word, which is greetings, and the last few words, which are, I have never forgotten.
Have you finished the process? Is there anything more you can do?
It's one of my satisfactions, is that I've shot my locker. I haven't got anything else I can try, and it's very satisfying when you can actually come to the end of a job and say, I have pulled out all the stops I've got.
But although Peter might be happy that he's done his best, I'm afraid at the end of the day, still all we're left with is this. So good luck, all you sound decipherers. The whole story can be found in Paul Tritton's book, The Lost Voice of Queen Victoria, published by Academy Books at £11.95 hardback and £7.95 softback.
I'll repeat that recording once more in case you missed it. Certainly is very indistinct.
Following the collapse of Century Radio, the airwaves in Ireland were filled with discussion of what had happened. Here's an interview with Marty Whelan from the station.
Now, Marty, you were one of the people who joined Century having left RTE. You were on radio and television on RTE. It was, if you like, a daring move for somebody in such a prominent position as yourself.
Yes.
Were you happy you took the risk? Are you happy now that you took that risk?
Well, I mean, obviously, it would be very foolish of me to say today that I'm happy I took that risk. No, I'm not happy today. I couldn't be happy today. But I had some regrets over the 2 years, mainly to do with the television. Plus, I miss some friends that I had made naturally over the years. I mean, when you're with 2FM for 10 years, it's a long time, and I had made many friends there, and I missed them, and I missed the camaraderie and all that carry on, and I missed being there. But I loved the new challenge that Century presented, and I loved what we were doing, and we were achieving something. I think we were on our way. I'm firmly convinced we were, and the station was making inroads. So from a personal point of view, when it comes to regrets, today I would be a fool not to have regrets, because I don't have a job today, and that's a very strange feeling for the first time in my life. So that's a very strange feeling, I needn't tell you.
Marty, over the last couple of weeks, Century FM has been widely promoting the likes of, for example, on your morning programme, giving away 6 cars, so things were starting to look bright, so it's obviously a deep shock for you.
Yeah, because if you're in that situation where you're doing cars, and we had some other major competitions lined up to happen, co-sponsorship deals, etc. So therefore, you're on your way, you're being positive, and you've lots of things happening. And the audience are responding. I mean, only recently we suddenly became available to the people of Sligo and the northwest region. So therefore, we were getting in there. We were on our way. And then, bang, out of the blue, this happened. So it's a very great shock.
Finally, Marty, what next for Marty Whelan?
Well, you have my phone number. I hope somebody else does. I don't know. I honestly don't know. There isn't a plan in my brain. I'm literally here today. The phone hasn't stopped ringing all last evening. The machine, the answering machine is full. And this morning, thank God, it's lovely that people are concerned and interested enough in me to ring up and commiserate, etc. And there have been some interesting phone calls as regards the future. So I just have to sit back and take stock now and try and decide what it is I want to do and what my options are. It really is as simple as that. But today, I think we might be cancelling that Barbados holiday.
No.
I don't think that's the one now, Adrian. I think it might be British Bay for the summer holiday.
Actually, it's a lovely part of the county as well.
It's the only place to go.
Marty, thank you very much indeed for sparing the time. I know it's a difficult time for you, but thank you very much indeed for sparing the time to talk to us here.
My pleasure. Thank you very much indeed.
That's Marty Whelan from Century Radio, or former Century Radio, talking to us about the demise of that radio station. This is East Coast Radio. The time now, almost 2 minutes after 11.
95 and 103 FM. East Coast Radio. News on the hour.
Good morning, I'm Fiona Carmody. The collapse of Century Radio does not mean abandoning the policy of providing an alternative to RTE, according to the Minister for Communications, Seamus Brennan. Opposition parties have criticised the government for what they called the failure of the broadcasting policy. Century ceased broadcasting at 6 o'clock yesterday evening and went into liquidation. The Independent Radio and Television Commission say that there are no meetings planned today between the Commission and Century Radio.
That was from East Coast Radio in the southeast of Ireland. Years of Radio Jackie. This LP record traces the story from early operations in fields through High Street Studios to the final close down.
Police with tracker dogs and post office detection men raided a pirate radio station in South London yesterday. Radio Jackie, which was said to broadcast for 6 hours every Sunday afternoon, was manned by about 15...
On March the 7th, 1972, Radio Jackie made parliamentary history when a tape of the station was played to a committee of the House of Commons during a debate on the Sound Broadcasting Bill. This tape, the first ever to be played in the House, was used to illustrate how commercial radio could sound if it were legalised in Great Britain.
Radio Jackie.
Jackie. Jackie. The station that fits snugly into your ear.
Radio Jackie, the sound of Southwest London. Radio Jackie, the sound of Southwest London.
This is Channel 4.
A new crackdown on pirate radio by the Independent Broadcasting Authority. But is the IBA acting in the public interest?
This is Angela Rumbold, Member of Parliament for Mitcham and Morton. As many of you will know who are regular listeners to Radio Jackie, the government has introduced legislation recently which may put Radio Jackie's future at jeopardy.
From the bustle of suburbia to the rolling Surrey Downs,
from houseboats on the River Thames to office blocks in town, close enough to really care as Brit should always be. We're Southwest London's favourite station. Radio Jackie.
In the last 16 years, I mean, Radio Jackie's done nothing but good, and the events leading to its closure are monstrous.
These fascinating recordings with a booklet of photographs all about Radio Jackie are yours for £6. For Europe, it's £8. And with airmail to the rest of the world, £10. Order your copy now from Radio Jackie, 120 London Road, Morden, England, SM4 5AT.
A letter from Simon Mason from Hull. Dear sir, I've listened to your station, Radio Facts, on and off for the last year or so, and I really enjoy the programmes you provide, especially the Sparks feature. I'm glad that you have started to use 3910 kHz, as at my location, 12255 is inaudible and 6205 is poorly received. The reason I was prompted to write is this. My main interest in shortwave is the so-called number stations. On the 3rd of December 1991 at 7.20 UTC in the evening, on your 3910 frequency, an English female voice was repeating the number 03289. Until 7.25, when it said, ready, ready, 3131. And it then went into five-figure groups. It was the first time I'd heard that particular station on that frequency, although it is a common broadcast elsewhere. As it happens, a book about European number stations, called Secret Signals, the Euro Number Mystery, written by myself, is due out shortly. I will send you details when I can. Perhaps you could review it. Well, we'd love to. Please send us a review copy. Your Sparks programme that day included music by the House Martins. They live 2 miles away. My receiver is a Sony ICF 2001D using an MFJ959B tuner and 20-meter random wire. I sincerely hope you get your deserved license and are able to finance a more powerful station. You certainly deserve it. Apart from Media Network, yours is the most interesting radio-related program. Thanks very much for that letter from Simon in Hull.